Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Lane Violation Podcast, where we might just cross some lines. My name is Greg Mello, and with me in my studio apartment, and not in our regular podcast room, the marvelous Andre Turan. How are you, man?
I'm much less than marvelous, but I'm doing well. We got NBA playoffs going on right now. Currently watching Philly and Brooklyn. Brooklyn's playing better than we expected. And our resident 76ers fan here is not sweating it.
Yeah, man. I mean, you always get the underdog's best shot in a game one of a playoff series. So, you know, it isn't great that Ben Simmons, Tobias Harris, and J.J. Redick decided not to show up in the first game of a seven-game series. But, you know, when you have a five-man lineup with them and Jimmy Butler and Joel Embiid, you would hope that just being able to get three out of the five guys will help you out. But, you know, I think just if we're going to do a quick recap of this game, because there's about a minute 45 left and Sixers are down 11. So it's looking like the Nets are going to pull this one out. But really looking at this game, the Nets guards did a great job attacking, specifically J.J. Redick and Tobias Harris on the defensive end. Caris LeVert looked incredibly spry today in the game, like pre-injury Caris LeVert. Spencer Dinwiddie and J'Angelo Russell also had pretty solid games. And before leaving with an injury, Ed Davis was a hound on the offensive glass for the Nets. So really a good game, I think, for the best game that you could have expected, really, for the Nets coming out. On the other end, Jimmy Butler really the only guy consistently for the Sixers doing anything. You know, plus 30 points in the game for him, but just couldn't get the job done. And Brooklyn will go up 1-0, so that all you want to do is the away team. You want to steal that home court away, and they're going to do it here. So good for them. We'll see what adjustments both teams make in game two. But I've talked too much about the series that we're not supposed to talk about. We're here today to talk about the Western Conference playoff series, do a quick preview, go around the horn like we did on the last episode with the Eastern Conference. And Dre, let's just dive right into it. So I layered these out from least interesting to most interesting. Mm-hmm. So we are going to start out with the 1-8 matchup, Golden State Warriors against the Los Angeles Clippers. The Warriors won the season series 3-1. Clippers really fight until the end of the regular season, working really hard for Coach Doc Rivers. And unfortunately, just due to some tiebreakers and last-second wins and losses, slide to the eighth seed. They get that matchup against the Warriors that they don't want. But what are your just some general thoughts on the matchup, the teams coming into this?
The funny thing is I was sitting down with our colleagues earlier in the week, and he asked me, he's a football guy, and he asked me, he's like, Warriors Clippers first round, okay. He's like, who do the Clippers have? Like, you know, I had to sit there and think about it. And he was like, who's their best player? And I was like, I mean, is Lou Williams coming off the bench, honestly? He was like, Warriors in four. I was like, well, I mean, I kind of assumed that anyway. But I'll probably take the Warriors in five. I think the Clippers are scraping up to get one, maybe at home. But I just, this series to me, just kind of, I think the Clippers should be happy to be here, and this fact that, you know, they kind of not dismantle the team, but they trade Tobias, their best player, and make some other moves. But they hung in there. They really played well, and they were scrappy. I think they got as high as the seventh seed at one point in time. And as things shaked up, no, they might have got a high six.
Because it was
at the point in time where OKC slipped to like eight, mm-hmm. and all that whole bottom half of the West was just kind of funky, but. I don't see Golden State having a problem here, but it's good to see the Clippers get in after, you know, kind of dismantling, I guess you could say, their core.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the biggest move for them, obviously, of the year was trading Tobias Harris to the Sixers in that big deal that netted them some picks. Landry Shamet, who looked great throughout the regular season. And Yeah, it is tough to, when you think about the Clippers as a casual fan, just kind of like, who do they have? They don't really have a star, like, grab guy. But what they do have, coached by Doc Rivers, is a collection of just really solid players throughout the roster. You have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who looked really solid as the rookie point guard this year. Danilo Gallinari looking really good when he was out there and healthy, which, you know, it's tough for him to do that, but when he is out there, he's very impactful. Montrezl Harrell, obviously was kind of one of the outside picks for Sixth Man of the Year, the way that he improved this year and had an impact. Garrett Temple was a great pickup at the trade deadline as well.
From Memphis, right?
Yeah. Pat Beverly, obviously, vocal defensive hound. So they've got a bunch of guys. And I think it is just, you know, nobody wants to draw the Warriors in the first round, but at the very least, I think it will be tough in the sense that the Warriors aren't going to have a team that just kind of rolls over. I think when you have a Doc Rivers coach team and a lot of these guys are really smart players, they might not necessarily have the talent to go one-on-one against the Warriors, but you're going to have to make the Warriors work a little bit, and that's honestly what's going to be important for them.
Like this Clippers roster, I mean, was always full of guys who are – they have a roster full of complimentary guys. It's like, if you put one or two stars there, this team would be pretty darn good. You know, one big time star, and they just have a lot of guys that not necessarily like role player. Well, no, they have a lot of role players. It's a roster full of role players, but solid role players. Not a guy that's just like at the end of your bench. So they deserve to be here as much as anybody.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they were in the top five in points per game as a team. They were top three in 3-point field goal percentage. They have a lot of things going their way. It's just, you're playing the Golden State Warriors, and you know, the one thing that was lingering towards the end of the regular season was Steph Curry rolled his ankle one of the last games of the regular season, but Steve Kerr said he's going to be fine. Looks like they're going to be rolling out that five-man lineup of Curry, Klay, Durant, Draymond, and Boogie probably to start out, and you know, Andre Iguodala is there to be that Hamptons five, you know, death lineup throw in. So it looks like they're ready to roll. Do we have any thoughts really about the Warriors going into this round? Aside from, I think that it'll be a good tune up for them, but any things that you want to see or, I don't know, that you think are out of the ring here?
Not really. I don't think they really have much of a concern until they probably get to the next. And I think they're fine. It's like you said, it's a tune up. They'll meet the four or the five after this, so which will probably likely, I think it will be OKC. Well, I mean, we're gonna get to that, right? Because four or five is that's 3-6. Five, that's the four or five is,
four or five is Houston is Rockets,
and Rockets Jazz. Yep. So that they actually probably want to use this series to adjust whatever they need to adjust now, because if the Rockets come through like I expect them to come through, I think they're gonna want to redeem themselves from the year before, and I think they can. I think they really do believe in that narrative that if Chris Paul was healthy, they would have won that series.
Yeah.
So
we'll get there. So what's your official pick for this one?
4-1 Warriors.
All right. Yeah, and I'd go the same here. I think Warriors get this done in five, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was a clean sweep.
Yeah.
So let's move on. We're going to go to the 3-6 matchup, actually. No. The Portland Trailblazers and the Oklahoma City Thunder. This probably wasn't what the Trailblazers wanted, seeing that the last night of the regular season, they rested just about all of their starters, their important players, and they still get a win after being down, I believe, as much as 20 against the Kings. They pull out a win, and they slide into the three spot. And the Oklahoma City Thunder won the season series 4-0 against the Trailblazers. Damian Lillard did not look great in those matchups. So, Trey, there is actually a lot to talk about for this series. But first, just what are your let's just look at a macro, general things that you think you will see here.
One, I think it's kind of big that Nurkic is gone.
Yeah,
I think that's a huge loss. Two, to me, the matchups work completely across the board in favor of Oklahoma City. You got two really strong guards in Portland, and the way that OKC can defend, we know they can defend one through five, But the way they can put pressure on guards with, of course, Westbrook, and you can even take, in this series, you can even take George off checking the wing defender and have him check in either McCollum or whatever. Because, you know, Russ is going to want to be the lead defender on Lillard. But I think that it's just going to be a lot of just smothering those two, because there's no valve. There's never been a kind of safety valve for Portland. The majority of their points, the majority of their offensive production is going to come solely out of Lillard and McCollum.
Well, at least with Nurkic out. Because when Nurkic was there, he was definitely the safety.
But with him out, even before Nurkic got there, they had no valve. There's no guy off the bench. Like, so they're going to have a tough time.
I think it will really depend on what they get out of Cantor for the series. Because, I mean, he was a good pickup, I think, for them. And he can do some of the things Nurkic can, but I don't think that he's necessarily as good of a passer, especially out of the post, that Nurkic was. You know, he can't really handle the ball as much as Nurkic can, albeit he doesn't do that a lot, but, like, enough so that, again, he is that release valve. And it's tough when you look at Zach Collins, who I think is not right where you want him to be as a stretch five type of guy that he hopefully will become, or else I think he would make more of a difference in this series. You know, looking at the Thunder side of the ball, it's really just going to depend on it looked like Paul George going into those final few games got back into stride. It looked like he's a little bit more healthy. So you just hope that he's going to be the same player that he was coming out of, you know, the first half of the season, really, that was looking like an MVP caliber player. But he has done great against the Trailblazers this year. Russell Westbrook, again, as long as he can, you know, take that step back that he was doing most of the year, I think, not really forcing too many times that he wants to be the guy. I think he's been doing a good job, like, passing out of the post and working out of that some of the time. But I think that the Thunder just, you know, as long as they can score, which has been their problem some of the times when they look kind of like the Celtics do sometimes, where you just don't know what's going on when they have all this talent. But, you know, Jeremy Grant, Dennis Schroeder, if those guys can pick up when they need to pick up, and Ferguson, that I think they'll be fine. I feel so bad because I really like the Trailblazers, and I thought they were having a great season, and I thought that they would be able to, you know, change the narrative a little bit about that upset last year where they just got swept by the Pelicans. But this is really the worst matchup, I think, that they could have had coming out of the first round. So, you know, anything else you want to bring up here? You want to make your pick?
Nah, I mean, I think I touched on everything I needed to touch on. I'm really confident in OKC in this one. And I think Russell's going to do the right thing. One of the more important things out of the whole development of Russell kind of deferring to George this year is seeing him go directly to Paul, or plays getting drawn up directly to Paul during crunch time, where in the past Russell would be trying to take that shot. I mean, even when KD was there, correct me if I'm wrong. I think Russell has kept his alpha mentality, but has been able to recognize George's strengths and then kind of look at how his strengths complement himself and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's made them pretty dangerous. You know, I think they can play with anybody in the West, honestly.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing this year is that Russ took a big step forward on the defensive end. Like, he's looked like I don't know. I haven't really done all defensive teams looking, because that's tougher for me. I don't usually go into that as much. But the times I have watched him this year, he's been a hound. He's been timing up, you know, his steals and whatnot pretty well. So if he can lock down Lillard, which this team is really built to do, then they'll be fine. I actually have the Thunder winning this in five, mostly just because I expect Lillard to get one. But I wouldn't be surprised if the Thunder smothered them and swept.
See, my thing is, if they can get swept by freaking New Orleans last year, I think this OKC team is better. I know the matchups and stuff are different, and Anthony Davis was kind of just eating them alive.
Yeah.
and Rondo and Drew Holiday were just playing great.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I'm gonna be safe and say five as well. I want to say it'll be a sweep, but I would also like to think that Damian Lillard wouldn't go out like that back to back years.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm gonna say five. I'm gonna say five. But it, you know, an easy five. Where like that one game the Blazers win, like they barely get it type.
Right. Yeah. Right. All right. Let's move on. Next series. I think this is a little bit more interesting than people are giving it credit. The Denver Nuggets at the 2 seed facing the San Antonio Spurs, sneaky 7th seed here. They split the regular season series 2-2. Pretty close games throughout. You know, the Spurs won a close one at home, 104-103. You know, no crazy. Oh, okay. I see. One game was a crazy, like 18-point loss. But most of the games were pretty close throughout the game. So, you know, I think this is going to be a great. You have a great narrative of Greg Popovich, you know, one of the better coaches of all time. Some say the best of all time. I would say the best of all time.
Yeah, I agree.
And then Mike Malone, who had a Coach of the Year run this year where he really. Helped lift the Nuggets throughout many injuries, brought some guys up like Morris and Jokic blossomed this year. I think that this is going to be a really exciting series to watch. But what are your general takeaways from this, Drake?
I've seen a couple of people actually pick the Spurs in this, which has been interesting to me. Like, but in like seven or something like that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But I don't see why that couldn't be a real possibility. Popovich is just savvy enough to get these guys. Clearly, he's had these guys playing to a level higher than what people expected, especially when Murray and a lot of other guys went down earlier the year. But he's getting good production out of Aldridge. He's getting a good solid production out of DeRozan. Brent Forbes and Derek White have been solid in the backcourt. A lot of people thought it was going to be a hole in their wing position, but they've been able to get by with Gay and Bellinelli. Is Bellinelli there, right? Yeah. With those two, and you're not going to really get nothing defensively there, but you know they've been able to do what is necessary. And I think, like I said, correct me if I'm wrong, this is a contrast of styles to me. You know. I do think the Nuggets are capable of playing like a slow press game, but I think they would like to get the ball moving and flowing and from hand to hand. And of course, it's all going to be through Jokic, which I've always thought is the most unique offense and just I've ever seen. Because like not your primary ball handler, but the flow of your offense is going through the five, and he's like moving the ball around. But I like the Nuggets. Kind of, I've always been high on the Nuggets' depth. I've just liked how Monte Morris and why am I forgetting? Malik Beasley.
Mm-hmm.
I've liked how they've come along this year, and I don't know. There's just something about the Nuggets. We've always been high on them. I love to watch them play, but I think the series could be a little bit closer than people expect. Just intuition off intuition.
Yeah, I think it was interesting. I was listening to the Low Post podcast the other day. And Zach Lowe had Coach Dave Thorpe on. They were talking about this series, and Coach Thorpe said that it would be wise of the Spurs to make Jokic shoot. And he made the comparison that Jokic is kind of similar player to Steve Nash in that he can really dissect a defense and make the right pass exactly the right time, use his eyes to, you know, make the defense move.
It's crazy because he's a center.
Exactly. He's a crazy... crazy player, but lately his three-point shooting has dipped a little bit, and you really need to see that ball fall in a little bit more to make him the most dangerous he can be. And the Spurs have been trying interesting lineups this season. Obviously, it's Popovich. He's going to be trying everything. So I think one of the lineups they talked about was having Jakob Poeltl and LaMarcus Aldridge as your bigs. Mm-hmm. And just an interesting look because on the other side you have Jokic and Millsap. So it's really going to be good matchups both sides, I think. You know, it's really going to be a chess match, I think. And like you said, contrasting styles for sure. I mean, I think the Spurs, the Nuggets too, but I think the Spurs are really good at adapting to what the other team is trying to do.
Pure coaching.
And it's crazy. I think Derek White is going to be really important in checking both Gary Harris and Jamal Murray in the series. And White, I know for he should be an all NBA defensive team guy. He's been just locked down, and I really can't wait to see DeJounte Murray back with him to make such a great backcourt. What do you think about DeRozan in this series? You think that he's gonna be like an X factor, or what are you feeling for him?
I'm saying you're getting classic DeMar DeRozan. I mean, like, DeMar is so. I think it's the reason he is kind of underrated. Well, underrated, air quotes. It's because he's going to give you what he gives you. I mean, dominate the mid-range, play solid defense. But I don't know how explosive that be. But, you know, the crazy thing is, it's interesting to see how he's going to play in the postseason, not in Toronto. You know? Because the omen for him and Lowry has been for years that they can't turn it on in the postseason. So, so what are we going to see in San Antonio? We're gonna see a guy that's kind of that's little hyped up, a little excited to try to quote unquote prove himself or to show that's not the case, or I mean I don't know, I have no clue, but you would assume based off lineups you would assume Denver would probably have Torrey Craig on them. Would they start Torrey Craig and have Craig checking DeRozan? You think they would go Murray, Harris, Craig, Millsap, and
Jokic?
Is that, you think that's a problem? I mean, they've been doing that lately.
I'm looking at DeRozan's numbers now, and I didn't realize how. I know that he wasn't a good 3-point shooter. He doesn't. He's kind of risk averse to it, but I didn't realize that he's actually shooting 15.6% from deep this season.
Really, don't talk about that at all.
On he's shooting under one attempt per game, which is crazy. But I also think it makes sense because Popovich has, so as the league has really adapted to, let's the best shot in the game is a 3-pointer or a layup. The mid-range game has obviously been left open a lot more, and when you have guys like LaMarcus Aldridge and DeMar DeRozan, obviously you want to highlight their strengths rather than force them into a little bit more weaknesses. So I guess it makes a lot of sense that that's where he is leaning on them. But it'll be interesting to see how he works with that, because obviously the Nuggets are going to be looking for that more. And a 7-game series, again, like we talked about, a lot slower. I think it's going to be a good series, but...
I think ultimately the Nuggets just have too many horses.
Yeah, they do have...
Because I forgot IT coming off the bench and stuff, too. Like, they have so many guys that can... Because Isaiah Thomas is very, very capable of giving you 30 on any given night if he gets rolling and hot. And he knows how to play in clutch moments and in the postseason. So, you know, let's say Murray or Harris is lacking, you know, you could easily have a two-guard set where Thomas is on the floor in big-time minutes. Would you disagree?
I haven't been paying attention to Thomas since he came back. I know he had a rough start, and then I guess he got a little bit. But I think, isn't Morris ahead of him as the backup?
Yeah, I would still assume so. But what I'm saying is because of the playoff experience and Thomas's ability to Malone would probably favor Beasley because that's just been his rotation. But you know, I wouldn't personally see a problem with giving Thomas some inflated minutes if he's playing hot and well, because that is not a situation that he's not used to, if that makes sense.
Mm.
So
yeah, no, it'll be important for them to draw upon his experience for sure. All right, so let's go pick here. What do you think?
I'm going Nuggets 4-2. I think I think they'll be able. Yeah, I'm gonna go 4-2. I'm going 6.
Yeah, I think I'd also go Nuggets in 6. I'm trying to think of whether I just want to stay, if I just want to say the Spurs would upset them, but no, I do think ultimately the Nuggets just have a bit too much talent on their side. But it will be a fun series, I think, a back and forth series.
They don't play until tomorrow, though, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, I do Nuggets in six. All right, let's move on to what I think is the most interesting matchup of the Western Conference playoffs, first round, the Houston Rockets, the four seed, and the Utah Jazz. And again, another team, the Rockets didn't play on the last night of the season. A lot of different things had to happen for them to slide to four, but it happened. And now they're playing the Utah Jazz, who, you know, you've got Rudy Gobert, the Stifle Tower, you've got Donovan Mitchell, you've got, you know, your boy, Ingles.
That's my guy.
So, overall takes of this one, obviously, you know, Harden and Chris Paul and Capella on the other side in terms of star power. But what do you think, Dre?
I think the matchup is good. I see a deeper series in P-Mine Spec here. Like, I think that's the reason they split 2-2 this year, I would assume. Like, Capella and Gobert, that's a solid matchup. No one can check Harden, so that doesn't really matter. But to see what him and Mitchell might be doing going back and forth, because Mitchell is the motor of that offense. Mitchell is going to drive the offense. I like the spunk that Joe Ingles plays with. So you're going to be getting like some chatty stuff with him. Rubio, dang, I'm tripping. What did I just say? I just lost my whole train of thought.
You brought up Ricky Rubio.
Yeah. Rubio's healthy and playing, right? Because I haven't seen the Jazz play in a minute, so I can't remember.
Last time I checked, I think he's out.
Is
actually
he out?
Let me see real quick. Yeah, as you can see, we we didn't have time to do the research beforehand, so this is all on the fly.
A little off the cuff.
So, you know, this is how it is.
But anyway, just to finish my point, I think the matchups are good enough for this series to go six or seven games, and I think they're gonna be solid games. But if you just want my prediction now, I can do that. I think it's Houston in six. Houston in six, 4-2.
That's interesting. I think that Rubio is very important to this series.
Yeah, because, I mean, if he's not healthy, I think it's impacting. That's why I was trying to look it up. Because I just haven't seen the Jazz play in a while. I just don't know what they've been. They've been kind of quiet this year. Because with their slow start, they're definitely not getting the buzz they were last year. Because also, you know, Donovan Mitchell isn't a rookie anymore. So, you know, his explosion brought some eyes to him. Now, I know there were news with the Russell Westbrook stuff, but I just haven't got a chance to check on that team. So
yeah, it looks like he'll be in. And I think it's just the fact that he is so injury prone, that people are very concerned about it. And I think that he is the primary defender against Harden for the Jazz, cuz you don't want to give Donovan Mitchell that defensive burden.
Yeah.
When he's really carrying the offense for them. And the thing about Mitchell is that he really had that sophomore slump for a little bit before catching on middle of the year and really finishing out the year strong. This series, I don't want to make it too basic, but it'll be really key as to what Rubio shows up for the Jazz, as to how tough they can make this series for the Rockets.
He's not played the last three games.
Okay.
So an ankle.
Okay. So it's really what percent healthy do you have him? I know this year teams could not stop James Harden, but, you know, we saw certain teams like the Bucks really leaning hard on Harden to, you know, make him go right instead of his
still
left.
Scored a lot, but it's just about with those guys, you know, they're gonna get their buckets. You just have to make their buckets tougher,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, his floater has really developed this year, I think. Harden, I think that's really what separated him, because before this year it was, you know, obviously the step back three or threes in general, and then the layups and fouls, but he's really made that mid-range area now a lot easier for him because he has that floater to touch over longer guys. And then obviously you have CP when he is healthy doing what he does.
You'll see what a lot of defenses do, which you just explained what the 76ers do heavily, is where they'll have their big go ahead and kind of back up and have that defender kind of trail in his pocket. So, like, if Harden goes to the rack, that defender can try to go vertical and not draw foul, which he probably still...
it's Harden, so they'll probably call it anyway.
But the defender will be in a trail position, so just in case Harden did want to step back for three. So now Harden's forced into a position where he has to kind of get a floater off. So, yeah, that's legitimate.
Yeah, so, I think the other thing to look at is just how long Rudy Gobert can stay in the game. I know last year, in certain lineups, he'd just be run off the floor. Kind of the same for Clint Capella for the Rockets, but I think this year Gobert has been a little bit better on the perimeter in short stints. And I think I have him as my defensive player of the year candidate. It's just how much can he impact the shots the Rockets are getting. Yeah. And obviously when you have really good passers like Harden and CP3, it's going to mitigate it a little bit. We're just going to see, again, can CP3 stay healthy as well? That was the big thing last year. But if I have to make my pick for the series, I think it goes deep. But Harden has just been so good this year, it's really hard to pick against him. I think I'll go Rockets. I'm going to go Rockets in seven.
Okay. Which is a real possibility as well.
Yeah. All right, so those are the Western Conference playoff series, and I think that unlike the Eastern Conference, where everyone's kind of looking forward to the second round, if it goes chalk, having the Raptors, Sixers, and then Bucks and Celtics, the Western Conference side, it could be a lot of mix. Besides the Warriors, I think there could be any one of these teams. I think has a good chance. Well, I guess maybe not the Trailblazers. I am really feeling the Thunder. But
I mean, because even in the series where I picked six for Houston, for the Houston series, and for
Nuggets,
the
Spurs, either of those,
it's really a one game thing.
Mm-hmm.
So there might be a tight game. If for example, the Spurs end up winning that tight game, that will now shift that to a seven game series easily. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's an easy six. Right. I think that that one of those victories is going to be, majority of those victories is going to be grinded out to the wire.
Yeah, I think so too. All right, Dre. Well, we have some time, so I do want to do some All-NBA teams here.
Oh, I don't have anything prepared for that, man.
That's all right. We're going to go right off the cuff. Let me just go first team again, because I think that we'll see how you do here with first team. So I can give you my five. In the backcourt, I gotta go Harden, obviously, and Damian Lillard has been so good this year, man. It's a toss up between him and Steph, but I ultimately gonna go Steph here, the better team, a little bit more. Of an impact, even though I think if you're doing like MVP voting, I'd have Lillard higher. And then 3, 4, 5, I'm gonna go Giannis, KD, and I'm gonna go Embiid, actually.
Okay, because I know you said Jokic before that.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
Embiid's averaging like 29, 13 or something like that, right?
Yeah, he had 27, I believe, 13 and like 4. Okay. I'll bring up his numbers real quick.
Let me just look at Jokic's numbers real quick. Let's see if I double check. Because the backcourt to me is the same. It's going to be Harden and Steph. I don't see them not giving it to Steph, unfortunately, as much as I love Lillard.
Yeah, so Embiid had 27.5 points, 13.6 rebounds, and 3.7 assists per game. Shooting only 30% from three, but 80% from the free throw line. PER of 26. Effective field goal percentage of 51.
Yeah, yeah.
But I know Jokic, obviously, monster numbers as well, and second seed on a Western Conference team. And he did play, I think minutes-wise, Jokic had about 300 minutes more than Embiid, if you wanted to bump Embiid for time played, because Embiid did miss a bunch of games towards the second half of the year. Embiid only played in 64 games, but he started all of those 64 games. I think if you're looking at the first teams, it's really just a toss-up between those two for center.
Okay. I think the only change I'm going to have
Jokic?
Yeah, I'll probably stick Jokic in there. And I know George is... It's tough between KD and George. Because George's career high is second in the league in scoring. So if James Harden didn't exist, George would have led. I don't know, man. But KD had a solid year, though, with the 26. And I think he had, like, it's basically like 26, 6, and 6, right?
Yeah.
It's tough.
I'm going to look up. Because maybe, let me see, Paul George.
Because, I mean, George isn't facilitating at all, but his defense has been so crazy to me.
Yeah. Actually, I might change mine to have Paul George.
I think I'll keep Paul George and KD, even though George's player efficiency rating is a little bit lower. But
he also has to carry a lot more.
But his high level is his elite level defense. I know people are trying to put Kevin Durant to like this the upper level.
Yeah, I'm not on that train. No,
but Paul George defensively is just another.
So George, Giannis, and then Jokic for you, Embiid for me.
Because for me, Jokic to almost average a triple double. I mean, it's 3 more assists per game, and he's playing center. That's kind of nuts, and just the second place in the West.
And then I assume our second teams would probably be very similar too. You'd have Dame. You'd probably go Kyrie, I'm assuming, with the second guard?
No, I'm going Russ.
You go Russ in the second team?
It's a triple-double, man. Like, I would have to go Russ. Like, to do that 3 years in a row, that's just ridiculous. So I would do that.
That's fair. And
then
go KD and Kawhi?
KD. Yeah, I mean, who else? I mean, unless you give him Blake consideration, but I would go Kawhi.
I'd go Blake third team, probably. Yeah. And then it would just be inverted for the center.
For third team here, this is going to be interesting because I do think you give Kyrie one, right?
Yeah, Kyrie is probably the lock for that.
Do you give Kemba 1 year?
So the
25?
The last guard spot, I think, is the toughest one because you've got Kemba, you've got Bradley Beal. You've got...
I mean, I think D'Angelo Russell will get in that conversation.
D'Lo, depending on how you feel. Simmons, how you feel. Obviously, the Western Conference sign.
I always forget about Simmons technically being a guard. That always...
You've got... I don't know if Donovan Mitchell really has the numbers, but I guess you could... Let me see.
Outside of the scoring, not really.
But there's so many good guards across... I mean, Donovan Mitchell is averaging 24, 4, and 4.
Yeah, it's not solid.
So, not bad at all.
For me.
And then Clay, obviously, Clay. As well.
Yeah, but that's tough. I do think Bill is a lock, actually. I think Bill is a lock. Bill, man, see, that's crazy, because Bill could easily be a second-team guy. But that triple-double, that's tough to argue. That's tough to argue.
I think if you feel that strong about Beal, then he'd probably be on your third team then.
Beal's been impressive this year, man.
Mm-hmm.
Especially like his facilitation. I think that's been impressive. I didn't expect him to do that at that clip. But man, Kemba's gonna end up getting left off, but I don't think he deserves to. I mean, this guy's basically averaging 26, still 6 assists along with that. And I also honestly think if he wasn't playing at Charlotte, he would get me of course, the spotlight would be different. But I have no clue who to put on the backcourt there. I have no clue.
I think I'd go Beal with Kyrie. And then forwards, Blake is going to be in there.
Yeah.
Who'd be your last wing here?
I don't know if they do something funky and say, "Oh yeah, Ben Simmons can be a wing for a week."
the way the ballot works, man, is so weird. for all NBA teams, because you can switch the players to fit your. Because
LeBron
would be
your wing.
LeBron. Yeah, you're right. Third team.
Or was LeBron a second team guy? You think he drops to the third? Because you totally forget about that. But
I think he. I can't believe we forgot about LeBron. But that's how that's how the crazy year happened. Yeah. No, I think LeBron's 13. I don't think you can 13? Take it. I don't think you can. I think
you don't take him over Kawhi or KD. I mean, not KD. I think
not KD.
Kawhi just puts the same amount. Well, not just the amount of rest that Kawhi's taking compared to LeBron being out, of course, a stretch of time with the injury. You think it's comparable to take LeBron over Kawhi?
I think so, because I think Kawhi is just generally, at least this year, a more impactful two-way guy. And if you're going to look at their numbers as well, I'm sure their numbers are probably close anyway. LeBron averaged, in 55 games, LeBron averaged 27-8-8.
Which is crazy.
Which is really...
Which is still extremely impressive, but...
Really good. His free throw shooting wasn't great this season, actually. Only 66%. 34% from three. And then Kawhi averaged 26-7-3, but he played five more games. So not the games aren't really where it is, but he did shoot better from three at 37%, an 85% free throw shooter.
What's the PER looking like?
PER for Kawhi, it's 25.8, LeBron 25.6. So you're almost looking at the same guy.
It's interchangeable.
Yeah, I'd probably go Kawhi for me.
I'd go Kawhi just second. Because, I mean, the failure of that Lakers season. LeBron to me is at the core of that. I'm sorry, unfortunately, even though it was from the start, you could say we were probably a disaster team. But, but yeah, so back to the third team, LeBron's your 13 wing.
Yeah.
Griffin, and then your center is Rudy Gobert, I would assume, right?
Yeah, I mean, because the only other guy you're probably looking at is Cat. And
that's tough. That's tough.
Cat had a really good offensive year, for sure.
Yeah.
But. You also just gotta like think of the impact that Rudy Gobert has overall. I'm trying to bring up.
I mean, basically 16 and 13 a game.
Cause they're not the same offensive player at all. No. Not at all.
But for Gobert to be so good on the defense end and still be able to average 16 points a night is impressive to me.
Mm.
And he's done nothing but score more each year. I mean, he had a half a point dip from 17 to 18, but he's basically almost had a 3-point increase in scoring. And his effective field goal percentage, of course, is going to be through the roof because he's around the basket, but, you know, I don't know. I mean, Cat, I love Cat. I think Cat's played awesome. It's tough, though. It's tough.
Yeah, I'd probably ultimately go... I'd probably go Gobert over Cat, but Cat, so good as, like, probably the best offensive big in the league, I would say, pretty handily. Yeah. The way that you can use him just about anywhere.
I mean, it's still 1.6 blocks a game is not terrible. I mean, that's almost 2 blocks a game. So, I mean, he's having some kind of effect, but definitely not to the stretch of Gobert. So, I think I would take Gobert there too as well.
Hmm.
But as far as the guard position, I don't know. I don't know. Still somebody's going to get shafted. Because for the year that Kemba had deserves recognition. Because he spiked and stuff, man. Like, I told y'all he's going to average over 25 games.
All right. Well, I think that'll do it for today's episode. Dre, thank you for coming on today, making it on time today. We'll be back at it again sometime next week, I'm sure, just to kind of check in on the series. I don't know... I don't think that they're... Well, let's see. So, we have games 1 and 2, so Saturday and Monday, and then we're going to have a skip day. So, it'll be... I don't think that we'll have the chance of a sweep in time for our next pod, but if we do, we'll see. If we already know a round 2 team, we'll obviously get on that.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you for listening to this episode of Lane Violation. We definitely crossed some lines today. And we look forward to crossing some more as we go along here. So take care.